We're going to continue our series today, Consider Recentering Our Lives in Christ. And last week I said something to this effect, and I thought it bared repeating. And that's this: sometimes what we want is comfort, but what we really need is courage. And sometimes what we want is sympathy, but what we really need is strength. We talked about often wanting a Mr. Rogers approach from someone when we're in need of comfort, a gentle smile or gentle pat on the back and a gentle word of, "I'm really sorry this is happening and it's all going to turn out okay." Sometimes we want that rather than someone like a coach who's confident and stern maybe and bold in their words that has a message of, "Hey, don't give up. Now's not the time to throw in the towel or to just lose heart. Now's the time to fight the fight, to run your race." And I get the mix of both of those. We need a little bit of both of those at times because we get physically exhausted. We get overwhelmed emotionally by all the things that are going on in the world around us. And in the book of Hebrews, which is our base text for this series, time and time again, the author stresses the idea of Jesus being superior or supreme, or simply stated, Jesus is better. We find that time and time again in Hebrews, all the way throughout. Jesus is better than anything this world has to offer. That's just the truth. Anything this world has to offer. And as disciples, this is where we get our courage. Jesus is better. We believe that, and we're inspired and we're motivated to press on because of that. If you do a word study in Hebrews of the word better and Jesus being better, you could make a list of all the things. Jesus is better than the law. He's better than our traditions. He's even better than the angels and the prophets. Jesus is better than all the high priests who came before him, and he's even better than Moses, which doesn't seem like a lot to us because we're so far removed from how revered Moses was by the Jewish nation, by the Jewish people. For them, that would have been a huge statement. But in Hebrews chapter 3, Jesus is the master, and Moses is the servant. Jesus is better. So with that thought in mind, I want us to listen again one more time to our anchor text from Hebrews chapter 12, verses 1 through 3. "Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders us and the sin that so easily entangles. And let us run with perseverance the race that is marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and the perfecter of our faith. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and he sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinners, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart." So last week we discussed that when we're tired and we feel like giving up, one thing that can be helpful to us as people of faith is to remember the witnesses that have gone before us. And in Hebrews chapter 11, there's a whole list of those heroes of faith who have finished their race, and now their witness, well, it echoes words of courage into our hearts and our minds and souls. And today we're going to focus in on now the idea of throwing off every weight that hinders us. If you're a runner, and even if you're not, it probably makes sense to you that in any race, if you're shouldering any unnecessary weights or burdens, it's a sure way to lose. And so what Jesus is doing in this text is he's inviting us to lay down the weights, all the things that hinder us, and he's inviting us to follow him into true freedom. So in this text, the Hebrew writer points out two categories that we're going to focus on today. First, he uses a verb, an action verb, throw off. Well, what are we to throw off? The things that hinder, and the sin that so easily entangles us. So we're going to dive into those things. But first, I want to draw our attention to that idea of throw off. The English translation of that verb, it comes from two Greek words, and the first one means to set aside. It means to set aside, and the other Greek word that makes up this idea of throwing off means to put it out of reach, that you can't even get to it anymore. And so if we'll do this, this idea of setting it aside and then putting it out of reach, then the things that so easily trip us up over and over again, the obstacles that get in our way of having an intimate relationship with God and an intimate relationship with one another, those things won't be there anymore if we'll do this idea of throwing off. Let me give you an illustration to maybe make this a bit more clear. I love the candy Reese's. And particularly this time of year, I love the Reese's eggs. And if you know what I'm talking about and you're a Reese's lover, you probably agree with me. So what I want you to do is imagine with me now that I'm in a staff meeting here at church. There's seven of us on staff, and we're sitting around the table in our conference room, and in the middle of that table is a bowl of candy, and it includes several Reese's eggs. Now, if that were the case, I'm just here to tell you that my attention would be in jeopardy. I wouldn't be much help in that meeting because I would be busy grabbing an egg, unwrapping it, eating one, two, three. You get the picture. Eventually, what I would have to do is set it aside. Maybe even pass it to Nate and say, Nate, get that away from me. But if I just set it aside and it was still within my reach, maybe even unconsciously after a few minutes go by, I might look down and realize, I'm holding another Reese's egg. I already took a bite of it. What am I doing? I just couldn't help myself, right? And so what do I need to do next? Well, I need to pick it up. And I need to take it clear across to the other side of the room where it's completely out of reach. So I've set it aside. Now I'm going to put it out of reach. And now the only thing that's left to do is if I want to indulge again, I pretty much have to humiliate myself by getting up, walking all the way across the room while everybody watches and knows what I'm about to do to get another one. Hopefully they would hold me accountable as they watched me. Hey, Micah, you've had enough. Go sit down. Right? So you kind of get the picture here that if we'll put it aside and then put it out of reach, then the things that so easily trip us up or keep us away from God, well, then we'll put them out of reach where they should be. And though that's a lightweight example, it brings to light a real life struggle for many of us, right? So what is it for you? What is it that trips you up? What is it that is an obstacle for you that keeps you away from God and keeps you away from the kind of relationships that you would like to have with others? And maybe today's the day. I want to encourage you that today is the day to lay it down, to throw it off, to set it aside and then put it out of reach. Now, what hinders me may not hinder you and vice versa, right? You know, for example, for me, alcohol is something that is a weight for me. It hinders me. And so that's the first thing that the writer talks about that we need to throw off, the things that hinder us. And this word hinder is just a general noun that means weight. Matter of fact, in the New Living Translation, it says strip off every weight that slows us down. So that's what the word hinder means, is just a weight. And for me, alcohol has been a weight in the past. Now that I've been sober for 20 years, it's not so much a hindrance anymore. But I'll tell you, the first 10 years or so, it was hard for me to even enter a restaurant where I could smell alcohol because it was a hindrance. It was a weight. And so you have to identify, you have to acknowledge what are the hindrances in your race. And you have to be willing to be honest about those. I want to offer three common hindrances or weights that we all experience from time to time throughout our journey. And the first one I'm just going to call the pressures of life. Jesus specifically talked about this in Matthew 13 as he presented the parable of the sower. And he emphasized that the pressures of life if we're not careful, they'll choke out the work of faith that's being done in our life. And some of you are all too familiar with this pressure, because when you started your race with Jesus, you were free. You didn't have these burdens or pressures of life choking out the work of faith. You began your walk with Jesus and you ran with Him free. But then life started to add weights. Imagine you're in a weight room and you're holding on to the bar, and life is adding weights on each side and it's becoming heavier. Even during this worship service today, you're struggling to participate because your mind is on the mortgage that you can't pay. You're struggling to focus because maybe it's your job, they're laying off person after person and you're afraid that you're next. Or the pressures of life are becoming so heavy because you have a doctor's appointment and the test results are coming back and you're fearful of what they might be. These things and so many more, there's so many pressures of life that come at us that can hinder us. And we have to be able to identify them and acknowledge them, be able to, by faith, set them aside and put them out of reach with the strength of God and with the strength of others. The next common weight could be for you religion that slows your faith down. Throughout the New Testament, we have new Christians being converted over from Judaism, just like the ones who received this letter of the Hebrews. They're doing their best to follow Christ, to understand what it means, what it looks like to follow Jesus, but they're also weighed down by their former way of life, their former religious system, and they're trying to transition from Judaism into Christianity. And they're being held back by well-meaning expectations, I believe, well-meaning traditions by their religious leaders. And Jesus talks to those religious leaders of his day, and he tells them, he says, this is what you're doing to the people. In Matthew chapter 23, listen to his stern words. He says, they crush, the religious leaders, they crush people with unbearable religious demands and never lift a finger to ease the burden. And so for some of us, for some of you, and this was my experience too, we experienced this in church growing up. Some of your former church leaders, they were demanding of the things that they expected of you in the church home you grew up in. Some unnecessary weights, perhaps. They demanded holiness or perfection in your purity. And when you struggled and when you made mistakes, they didn't support you. They didn't offer grace and help. They added another weight, and they looked at you and said, do better. And so for some of us, this was hard, this was difficult, this was our experience. And for some of you, you've decided to give God another try. You've come back to God, you've come back to His church, and you're giving it another chance. And to those of you for who that's true, I just want to say thank you for your courage. Thank you for coming back and giving the Lord another try, because we are all God's beloved. And we belong to Him. We belong to one another. And His grace is enough for all of us. Another hindrance is something that I'll just call sin struggles. Something that weighs us down. It's an obstacle between us and God. Now the Hebrew writer is going to address a specific sin in verse 1. And we'll come back to that here in a moment. But for right now, I just want to talk about this hindrance that can be a secret sin or a sin that is known by a group of people that you're connected to, but it's something that just keeps coming back. It keeps coming back. You can't seem to shake it. But it's something that is purposely affecting our relationship with God, and it's something that's against God's will for our life. So the intensity in which we're to resist this sin, whatever that sin might be for you, the intensity in which we're to resist it is found in verse 4 of chapter 12. Listen to this verse. In your struggle against sin, you have not resisted to the point of shedding your blood. And of course, this is pointing back to the previous verse, verse 3, where Jesus, he died for us. He endured the opposition of sinful men, and he endured the cross for each one of us. He shed his blood, he died for us. And so what the writer is saying is the temptations that you're facing, the sins that you're facing, you haven't resisted them to the point of shedding your blood. let me illustrate this to try to make it a little bit more clear for us. My mom growing up was a little different from the other neighborhood moms. Some of my friends, if they had a hangnail and went home to their mom, they were done for the day. They were on the injured list and we didn't see them for a while. If I went home with a scrape on my elbow or on my knees or something like that, my mom would look at it, she would examine it, and she would say something like, "Well, I don't see any blood, so get back out there. Go back out and play. Have fun. Be outside. Go do your thing." In other words, it's not quite serious enough for you to stay home. Get back out there. Keep trying. Go have fun. And I think that's the kind of intensity that the Hebrew writer is talking about. He's saying, you're not bleeding yet. It's nothing that you can't overcome with the help of God and with the help of your brothers and sisters. So keep resisting. Keep persevering. Keep enduring the things that you're facing. And with the help of God, you can overcome. But you know, culturally, this is different from what we experience, the things that we hear from our culture. In culture, we're encouraged to do whatever makes us happy, to leave the path that's leading toward Jesus and to take our own path, to create our own path. We might even think to ourselves, we're surrounded by so many things that are counter to the will of God. What are we supposed to do? I think the Hebrew writer would look at us. I think Jesus would look at us and he would say, you're supposed to bleed. You're supposed to pick up your cross and follow me daily. You're supposed to sacrifice by humility and grace and love. Be self-sacrificial in your life and follow me. So listen, here's the intensity in which sin works in our life. If we don't resist it, if we don't fight it, if we don't throw sin off and put it aside and out of our reach, here's what sin will do. Sin will creep into our life and it'll build a wall between us and God, and then it'll blame God for the wall. I've believed that lie before, and it's very hard to overcome. And we say to ourselves things like, you know what, it's just for a season, I'm going to go and do what I'm going to do, and then eventually I'll come back to God. But the problem with that is eventually is a futuristic thing. It's a putting off. And in the meantime, while we're putting off coming back, sin builds that wall between us and God and then blames God for the wall. So we can't take this lightly. We have to be intentional and intense in our resistance to sin. We have to be willing to throw it off, put it aside, putting it out of reach. So the second category from verse 1 that we're to throw off, first it was the hindrances, and now it's the sin that so easily entangles us. And I believe what the Hebrew writer is doing here is he's going from generally talking about throwing off things that hinder us to something very specific. And when I was first reading this, I was thinking to myself, he's got to be talking about pride, because isn't pride the source of much of our sin? And yes, pride is the source of a lot of our sin. But I don't think that's what the author is talking about here. If we can zoom out and look at the bigger picture of the context, Hebrews 11 talks about something very specific that is setting up chapter 12. And I believe it's the sin of unbelief. Unbelief in who God is, who He is, and what He's done, and what He's going to continue to do. And when we do that habitually, when we just continually disbelieve that God is who He is and that He's doing what He's doing, then it becomes a sin. Let me do my best to illustrate this. So if I'm carrying the weight of unbelief, if I don't believe that God is who He says He is and that He's doing what He says He's going to do, then suddenly the stress and the pressures of this life start to choke out the work of faith in my life. And everything becomes heavy and burdensome. And if I don't have faith, then suddenly I'm faced with the uncertainties of this world, like the coronavirus. And we're unsure of everything around us. We don't know what tomorrow's going to bring. And if we don't have faith, then we're lost in the chaos and confusion of it all. However, if we have faith, as Hebrew 11 stresses, then the pressures of life don't seem so overwhelming. They don't seem so heavy. Because by faith, I can see that God is who He says He is, and that He's never going to leave us, He's never going to forsake us, and that He's at work bringing good out of the chaos. And by faith, I can set it aside and not let it overwhelm me. I can put it out of reach so that I can focus on faith, hope, and love, the things that are most important in this life. And as I do that, it helps me to persevere and endure. It helps me to be able to continue to move forward and run the race that's marked out for me. One more example before we close from Hebrews 11. Have you ever thought about Moses' mother in Hebrews 11? Imagine the stress that she was under as she considered what to do with her baby boy as all the boys in Egypt were being killed by the Pharaoh. She considered her options, and I'm sure under high amounts of stress and despair, she built a little basket, and she puts her baby boy in it, and she puts him in the Nile River in hopes that he would be safe. Talk about a stressful moment of life. But you know what? She believed in who God was. And she believed that God was the one who would save him, redeem him, and restore him. And so the pressure and the stress of that moment, she was able to set it aside and put it out of reach so that she could focus in on her faith, so that she could focus in on who God is and how He was going to get her through that moment. She was able to move forward by faith under a heavy amount of stress and despair. So all of this to say, we must believe that Jesus is better than anything we're going to face in this world. Jesus is better than that unreasonable boss that you have. Jesus is better than your anger problem. Jesus is better than that drug addiction that you have and that alcohol addiction that you have. He's better. And Jesus is better than the unfaithfulness of your spouse, as much as that hurts. Jesus is bigger than that. And Jesus is better than the grief that we all continue to experience together. He's better. He's bigger. He's greater. And Jesus is better, and He is bigger, and He is greater than the coronavirus that we're facing. He just is. And if we believe that, if we have faith in who God is and what He's going to do and what He's going to continue to do, even the faith the size of a mustard seed, that's enough. If we'll believe that, then God's going to bring us through. God's going to bring us through. When we believe that Jesus is better, we're able to run free with perseverance. As we consider the Christ together, would you be encouraged by His grace and by His love? And as you do that, run with freedom. God bless you.